Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's June 12th. 60 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. 63 degrees at the Heber Valley Airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Thursday forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at plenty of sunshine expected as we go throughout today. It's going to be a hot one out there for us as high temperatures in Park City will climb into the low to mid 80s for highs. The Heber Valley, look for plenty of sunshine. We'll see those temperatures climbing into the upper 80s to near 90 degrees for the daytime high. As we go into your Friday, we're going to close out the week with lots of sunshine and also hot temperatures. Expect highs to climb back into the mid 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing to around 90 to 91 degrees as we get into the Heber Valley. So low 90s becoming a mainstay here for the Heber Valley as we start off the weekend. Your full weekend forecast is calling for lots of sunshine, but also very warm temperatures. High temperatures will be into the mid to upper 80s for Park City for your Saturday and for your Sunday. We're looking at high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley on Saturday. The high temperatures will likely climb into the low to mid to maybe even a couple of upper 90s scattered around the Heber Valley as we go throughout the afternoon for your Father's Day. So Father's Day is definitely looking like the hottest day over the next 7 days here in the forecast. We could also see a few extra clouds moving through with a disturbance here as we go into your Father's Day Sunday. But right now we're keeping the forecast dry as it doesn't look like it's going to come with any moisture. We'll have a few clouds to kick off the day for your Monday in Park City. Otherwise, look for lots of sunshine, highs cooling down back into the low to mid 80s for us as we go into your Monday in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures only in the low 90s then for the Heber Valley on your Monday with that sunshine returning. Tuesday will feature lots of sunshine. We'll see those high temperatures cooling down to only around 80 for Park City by the time we get towards Tuesday with highs only in the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. So a little bit of a dip in those temperatures briefly for us as we go into our Tuesday. But don't worry, we start to warm it back up again as we go into the middle of next week with highs back in the low 80s in Park City. Highs back around 90 in the Heber Valley with lots of sunshine. That's your latest forecast from the ABC 4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us now from Mountain Trails Foundation, Executive Director Laura.
Yeah, we've got quite the trails report today. Happy Thursday, everybody. Basin Rec is reporting that we wrapped up, this is what they're saying, we wrapped up deadfall clearing on all of their trails on Tuesday, and people come across any blowdowns or problems, let them know at Basin Rec. You can look that up on their website. Looks like trails and park impacts this weekend will be the Ski Town Shootout. Lacrosse tournament is Friday and Saturday at Trailside East Park, Matt Nuke Park, and Ecker Hill. Round Valley Rambler is on Saturday, and that will start and finish at the North Round Valley Trailhead from 6 a.m. to about 12:30 p.m. When they're tearing things down. That will be impacting 13 miles of the Round Valley Trails. If you want the route, you can go ahead and look that up on the Round Valley Rambler website. Looks like the Twisted Fork race is running this Saturday as well. That's the Ultra, and that's start and finish at Basin Rec Fieldhouse and will be throughout most of the Glen Wild Trail network, including Flying Dog. There is a 15K, 30K, and 68K. Start times are 6 a.m., 8 a.m., and 9 a.m., so they think in most runners will be done by 1 o'clock-ish, so the Flying Dog impacts will be done by then. Mia from Wasatch Trails Foundation has reported that everything is open and clear in Heber Valley. Big Poles is having volunteer work day this Saturday, 8 to 10:30-ish. Look more information on their website. And Rick from Mountain Trails is reporting that, first, wanted to say thanks to everybody who came out for National Trails Day. We did two really great projects. If you want to find out about those, you can look those up on our social media feed. There are a couple of trail closures and trail impacts to be aware of. Park City Mountain still has heavy construction going on out of the First Time Lot and the Three Kings Zone. So please respect those closures. It's dangerous up there with the machinery, and people can't always, or the machine operators can't see you. So just do not assume that those are safe. If there's a closure and you go around it, you could die. Jenny's and First Time Return are the areas of impact. Our team has been performing tread and maintenance work on CMG from the mid-mountain down to the base. And so there's some, you know, loose loose areas up on CMG, so be careful of that. Machine work is being done on lower CMG, so lower CMG, below Loose Moose today, so please avoid that section of trail. And we have cleared most of the upper elevation trails, including the 9K, Io, Bloods Lake, and Lupine up in Bonanza Flat. Bloods Lake is still holding snow, and just a reminder, all of the Bonanza Flat trails are still closed. We do not open those until July 1st to help with the conservation values in that open space. The animals need some space to raise their young before we let people in that neck of the woods. Please pass along any blowdown information, preferably with a pin, to Zach, Z-A-C-H, at mountaintrails.org. And I think that wraps it up. Oh, paid parking. That's right. Bonanza Flat paid parking, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Every day in all three Bonanza Flat parking lots. So that's that. Take a breath.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Laura. Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen, taking a look back at some of the business discussed at yesterday's meeting. Park City Elks Club members Cheryl Sosnick and Michael Desjardins have details on this year's Flag Day ceremony happening Saturday. And Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Shelley Barris, along with Park City Board of Realtors CEO Jamie Johnson, with details on the upcoming overall ball happening later this month. On the phone now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Council Chair Tanya Hansen. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start. I just got to notice that Summit County Health's CAMAS office is closed today. Is that any reason why that you know of?
I don't know anything about that, so I can't answer.
Okay. It just came up. Let's take a look at Service Area 8. The council discussed that yesterday. The entity that's overcharging a few North Summit residents to maintain all of Chalk Creek Road. They're paying thousands of dollars in property tax to do this. You and Councilmember Chris Robinson supported slashing the rate by a third. And like Councilmember Robinson asked, why do we still need Service Area 8?
Well, I think that's a really good question. Service Area 8 was created during the oil boom. And this area is the head of Chalk Creek area. And it goes into the Anschutz area, into Wyoming, where there was huge oil fields and natural gas. And that service area number 8 was created, and that gives the revenue to the county to maintain the Chalk Creek Road from Main Street in Colville clear to the Wyoming border. Okay, so nobody else on Chalk Creek Road, including me, pays into this, but there are 9 property owners that pay. Well, there are 9 residents and a few more property owners, and then there's the gas and the oil companies that pay into service area number 8. But what has happened over time, as the revenue has decreased from oil and gas, the revenue has to be made up somewhere, so it's been, you know, it's on the backs of these residents, and they are paying way more money in property tax than they should be. So we need to figure out a way how to make this fair to those residents. I mean, after the meeting last night, one gentleman stayed and told me his property taxes are $27,000 to live in Upton, Utah, which is ludicrous. So we need to do something to help offset the cost for these residents in that area.
So why are only these folks and not all of Chalk Creek residents paying?
Isn't that crazy? I don't know. I don't know why just that area. I guess in the day, with the revenue coming from oil and gas, maybe they drew a circle on the map and said, this is all that needs to be in the service area. And the problem with extending a service area, like if they went to Main Street and Colville and up to these residents and said, let's have this whole area, service area number 8, all of the people who live in that area would have to vote to approve that. And, you know, I just don't think that's going to happen. So we have got to look at a way to make this fair for these folks and get this burden off of them. What this looks like, we approved last night to reduce their tax rate by a third for now as we sort through this and come up with a better plan in the future.
So could it be slashed entirely?
I hope so. You know, I think they need to be on par with the rest of us that pay property tax. So I would hope that we could get there. I don't know what that looks like because, you know, it's revenue needed to maintain Chalk Creek Road. And there is still oil and gas coming out of this area. So there are still those big rigs coming up and down the road. So the road does, you know, really need some maintenance, but we need to figure this out.
Now, County Manager Shane Scott said that with usual tax increases, that may or may not be enough to move the needle on the actual tax bill for these residents. What do you think?
No, I think that there's a way to move the needle. I mean, for somebody who lives in Upton, Utah, to be paying $27,000 a year for property tax is crazy. So I think that there's got to be a way. We have asked Matt Levitt to come back to the table. We need to know the costs associated with maintaining the road, where we can make that up somewhere else. And, you know, we just need more information in order to make an informed decision.
Now, what's the bill that State Senator Ron Winterton passed to tax oil and gas, and could that help here?
Yes, Ron Winterton passed there was a bill passed last year in the legislature that basically imposed an additional tax on oil and gas revenue. I don't know, I think it was like 25 cents a barrel, or, you know, I forget the calculation. But that was passed last year because, you know, he's in the Uinta Basin, so he's looking at this as well. And that could help offset the cost. The concern with that is oil and gas going to continue to be diminished in this area, and will that long-term solve the problem? That is also more data we need in front of us to make an educated decision on how to manage this.
All right, moving on, you heard from former council member Melina Stevens presenting on how we got here with House Bill 356. This is the bill that would district future council elections. She also gave the tentative meeting schedule for the commission. Talk to us a little bit about why Stevens was nominated as the chair of this districting commission.
Well, I think Melina is the perfect person at this time to be on that committee and also chair it, because she understands the county. She knows the map of the county very well. She understands the precincts, the population. She just has a lot of information from being on the council that I think is appropriate at this time to help lead the charge on this committee. Right now, they have scheduled 9 meetings from June through September. You know, and it's kind of like herding cats. She also knows all the mayors. She has personal relationships with these people. So I think she's the perfect person for the job. They're hoping to have this accomplished by the end of September, because the deadline is October 1 to come back to the council with this redistricting map. She's herding cats, trying to get all those mayors together and staff as well, and meeting locations. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to line this up.
Yeah. And the fact that she's a Democrat, is that going to annoy the mayors on the committee or state lawmakers?
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, she is really taking the stance that, you know, it should be nonpartisan. We should be looking at what's fair for the county residents. And it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, how do we draw this map that is fair to everybody?
Mm. Well, it's all about partisanship, though, right? The bill itself.
Well, yes. Mm. Yes.
Any update on the latest with the special session that the governor is said to expect sometime this fall?
No update on that. We're still waiting to hear the timeline on that. I don't know.
All right, moving on to the Recycle Utah discussion, where you had apparently everybody in the room. You posed the question to Recycle Utah: will they take the 4-acre lot at the Gilmore property near Home Depot and High Valley Transit? What's their answer?
Their answer is they're meeting with John Angel, who is the Director of Public Works for Summit County, on Friday to really analyze that parcel to see if it will work for them, see what work is needed. Does it need, you know, to be leveled more? Does it need to be paved? What are the utilities needed? I believe the utilities are stubbed in that location, but we don't know, and John doesn't know, what they need to move their operation there. So they're meeting on Friday to assess that. I do feel like I walked away from that meeting last night feeling like they are very interested in that parcel. They've looked at a lot of other areas, but nothing seems to be able to work for them. So I'm very hopeful that this will be the answer. They're on a short timeline. They need to be off Munchkin by next September. So really, June is when they need to start moving their location. That's a short timeline to get everything up and going. There are people on our staff who thinks that could be accomplished if a decision is made, like, now. So hopefully they'll figure that out on Friday.
Yeah. And as we had heard with the High Valley Transit campus, as they were building out there, there is a lot of bedrock, which really escalated the cost. What do we know about bedrock and this other parcel here?
My understanding is all of that was taken care of during the same time as High Valley Transit location was being worked on as well. My understanding is that's been mitigated.
All right. Now, it sounded like Recycle Utah is really committed to a larger facility on a larger piece of land. So I guess do they just build something temporary out here, or is this going to be the final home?
I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not sure they know the answer to that, because we're still looking at, you know, a final determination of what a larger recycling facility would look like, where it would be located, how long it's going to take to get this up and going. My feeling is that they're looking at an interim location to continue what they are doing today until there is a larger conversation and decision made of what the future holds.
Okay, tell me about the disagreement over a grant application that the county and Recycle Utah filed with the EPA last year. It seems like Recycle Utah seems to think that the county committed to a $25 million plan, but the county attorney says otherwise.
Well, yeah, that was an interesting subject that was brought up. So there was a partnership agreement signed between Recycle Utah and the county, but it was for a grant to be able to build a larger facility. That did not enter us into an agreement of what our partnership would look like for a long-term facility. I think there was a misunderstanding there. And really, at this point, it's a moot subject, because that grant, we didn't get the grant anyway. So, but I think that was good discussion yesterday, and it clarified that, no, that wasn't what our expectation of that partnership agreement was.
And what was the letter that Councilmember Roger Armstrong referenced? It said that Recycle Utah doesn't want to continue collecting materials?
It was a letter we got, and actually, interestingly enough, I have it right in front of me, dated February 12th, and it talks about, you know, what they recommended as possible solutions. And in this, it was recommendations of feelings they had of how we should move forward. But as I stated yesterday, I wanted to hear from them, what were their goals for the next 18 months of trying to find a solution for their current situation? I think there's two subject matters here, Leslie. There's the long-term $20 million facility. That's a discussion. But there's also the discussion of what's happening right now and how do we relocate them and what do they need to make that happen for the interim. So those are the two things that I'm trying to separate so that we can make some progress.
So are Recycle Utah and Summit County on the same page? I mean, that was kind of the phrase we heard over and over, same page yesterday.
I feel like after yesterday's meeting, we were.
Yeah.
We are, I should say. Mm-hmm. And the reason for yesterday's meeting was because we felt like we were hearing different things from different people. You know, the council was talking to different people on their board, and we were never in the same room having this discussion, so we were all walking away with the same information. That was the goal of yesterday's discussion, and I feel like we got there.
Okay, because the conversation overall felt really circular. You felt like you did get something accomplished?
I do. I felt like they committed to looking at Lot 4, and they also committed that they want to continue what they're doing today until there is further determination of how we solve our long-term problem.
And it sounds like you gave them 30 days to do that?
That was me as the council chair. I mean, we didn't make a motion on that or anything, but I think if they need to move forward, in 18 months to a year. We need to be making decisions like now.
Okay. Let's see, the Klein-Dolly discussion. The council went into closed session just before it awarded that bid for that property, and it was awarded to Columbus Pacific Development. What changes, if any, were raised during closed session?
We looked at the agreement because there were council members who felt we needed more specific language about the financial feasibility for both the county and the developers. So we went into closed, we made some changes to that agreement that was presented in public, and we approved the agreement and moving forward with Columbus Pacific. I'm really, really excited to move forward with this Klein-Dolly project. As you know, we had some fabulous applications, and every one of them would have been great. But I think what Columbus Pacific brought to the table with local organizations working together was really the icing on the cake on that proposal.
So how did the council guarantee financial feasibility?
We put language in, and I don't have the document in front of me, so we put language in the document that said both the county and the developer would ensure there's financial security in this proposal moving forward. We both have to agree to that.
Okay. So now you enter into a 180-day negotiation with the developer. What are the council's priorities here?
Well, we've set up a little subcommittee, which works best for us, and that is Chris Robinson and Candace Hart on that subcommittee to work with Columbus Pacific to really look at the design and how this will all play out. So that's how we're going to move forward with that, you know, and it's going to be a process. It's going to happen overnight. There's going to need to be a zone change based on the final development agreement. It's going to have to go to a planning commission. It's going to need public hearings. You know, the one thing I would like the public to know is Columbus Pacific yesterday said that they are going to be hosting open houses, and they want feedback from the public of what this development should look like in the future.
And how closely does the original proposal align with the council's vision here?
Well, that's kind of a matter of opinion. There's some on the council who weren't really thrilled where they had placed the field house, and maybe there's a better placement for the field house there. There's some people on the council that didn't like the way the roads were designed. You know, there's a lot of differing opinions. That's why it's important for us to sit down and really hammer this development out.
Okay. And the council temporarily created a new administrative development agreement process for Dakota Pacific. So will that be used? What's used with Columbus Pacific, or is that just a normal agreement for approval by the council?
I think it's just a normal agreement.
Okay. Finally, Mountain Regional is expanding its equipment and expanding its reach by one parcel. We've got a $42 million expansion plan, mainly financed with a loan. Any concerns over that financing?
No, I think Mountain Regional does a really good job in their research and understanding, you know, what's best for them financially and also for their constituents. They do a great job. I think their project objectives are solid. They need to meet increased demand. As you probably know, there's other subdivisions out there coming to Mountain Regional looking for help on their water systems. They need to, you know, fully utilize the Lost Creek water that they have out of Weber River. I'm very comfortable with their presentation.
Okay. Anything else, Tanya?
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Summit County Council Chair Tanya Hansen. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Saturday's Flag Day, and once again, members of the Park City Elks Club inviting members of the community to a flag ceremony. In the studio with details, I have Elks Club members Cheryl Sostek along with Michael DeJarnett. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
And Cheryl, maybe we'll just start with you, and you can tell us, I mean, why is Flag Day something the Elks Club has picked up as an annual event?
Okay, so actually, the Elks were one of the original groups who were promoting Flag Day way back at the turn of the century. As a matter of fact, so the Elks were formed in 1868, and by the early 1900s, they were actually doing a Flag Day ritual with all of the lodges in the country beginning in 1907. and they were promoting this to be a national recognized event ever since then. And so because Elks are patriotic, Elks are an American organization, Elks respect the flag, and we're just a non-denominational, non-political American charitable organization, but the flag is a very important part of our patriotism. So the Elks, ever since 1907, have had a ritual that all lodges go through. And in 1916, they started to try to go nationally, where they were trying to get Woodrow Wilson to make it a national event. But it took until 1949, when Harry S. Truman, who was an Elk himself, decided that, yes, actually, he declared it it's not a national holiday, it's a national observance, but beginning 1949. But the Elks were really kind of the ones who pushed for that ever since 1907, because we'd like to celebrate patriotism.
Okay, so what happens, and when and where?
Okay, so first of all, it will be this Saturday, which happens to be Flag Day, the 14th of June, and it is going to be in the parking lot of the Senior Center. That's because we want to do it outside on a beautiful day. And as you probably know, the Elks Lodge on Main Street doesn't have any outdoor area that we can go to. And so we've partnered with the seniors for about the last 5 years, started out by having them come to the lodge to celebrate Flag Day with us. And then we got the brilliant idea, let's just move it over to the Senior Center. So the seniors will be there, but this thing is open to the entire community. And so it will be starting at noon on Saturday, in the Senior Center parking lot. And because we're using the parking lot, if you're going to come, and everybody is welcome, but please ride your bicycle, take the bus, carpool, and park at the north end of the library field or something like that, because there won't be any parking available in the parking lot. Now the ceremony is this ritual. It's actually written down from the National Elks. All 1,700 of the lodges will be doing the same ceremony on Flag Day. And we actually parade in all of the flags throughout the history of our country and tell a little story about each of the flags. And we have scouts and Elks and members of the community who parade the flags in, and as we talk about them. And then we have some patriotic singing. And it lasts probably no more than a half an hour, maybe even less than a half an hour. And it's just a nice American thing to do. And the fun thing that we also have been doing afterwards is inviting everybody to stay for a picnic lunch. And that's also on us. And so right after the ceremony, people are welcome to stay for hamburgers and hot dogs and all the trimmings at the Senior Center.
So do you need people to RSVP or something so that
No.
you have any idea how much to?
No, we'll just wing it, and we'll take whoever shows up. You know, we've been doing it now for about 5 years, and we kind of have an idea about how many people are going to be showing up, so we'll have food for everybody. So they don't have to RSVP. Just, it's a beautiful day. It's going to be really hot and sunny, so I recommend, it's going to be outside, I recommend you maybe bring an umbrella to protect yourself from the sun. And we'll have chairs outside for you to sit in as we do the ritual.
Okay. Michael, it sounds like you have a little bit of history about the Elks Club. And it's actually known as the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks.
Right.
Where did that come from?
It's just one of the original mission of the Elks. It was started in New York in the 1860s, as Cheryl said, and it was started by a group of actors, really as kind of a social club, but they saw that there were needs in the community to help their fellow citizens that were down on their luck and things like that. A lot of the quote-unquote fraternal organizations were started before there were large insurance companies and health and casualty insurance and things like that. So people would join these clubs, pay their dues, so that if there was ever anything that happened to them or their family, they had a community that would help in disaster type situations. But they started the club and found that there were needs in the community and became a philanthropic organization instead of just a social organization. That's when it became Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks. BPOE is what it says on the Elks logo.
Right. And the BPOE in Park City started when?
120 years ago, Cheryl, and built the first lodge. Well, we're active prior to 120 years ago. One of the first fraternal organizations that was active in Park City, built a lodge 120 years ago. That one burnt in a big fire 100 years ago. The current lodge, I believe, is 101 years old, right here on Main Street. So it's a historic building here, and we really have tried to revitalize it over the last few years. Fraternal organizations fell out of favor in the 1980s, and we're seeing that they're really picking up in popularity around the country as people move from community to community and are looking for, when people arrive in a community, they're looking for ways to integrate and ways to make friends and ways to socialize and be part of the community, and we think that that's part of the growth here.
So you've seen some of that revitalization here within the Elks?
Absolutely, and we also are actively campaigning with new members and with events to raise money for lodge improvements so that we can really update the interior of the lodge. We can't do much with the exterior of the lodge just because it's a historic building, but the interior we want to improve.
All right, and then for people who might be interested in joining you, what, they've just fill out an application?
Mm-hmm. Elks.org is our website, and it has forms there to fill out. They go to our secretary here, and we contact individuals and try to get them out for a social hour and so that they can meet us and see the lodge.
Do you still do the voting with like the black ball?
We do. We actually do. But since I've been there, I've not seen someone not voted in that was proposed by a member.
Okay. And then what do members pay a year?
I believe the entire dues here at the Park City Lodge are $66 per year. So the most of what we do is members donating and that sort of thing. The dues don't really carry our lodge.
Yeah. What's some of the volunteer work that the Elks do here in the area?
Camp Wapiti, which is outside of Tooele, is our signature philanthropy. And it's a camp for children all summer long. There are week-long camps for children with disabilities. One of ours that we really promote are our Gold Star children, which unfortunately are children that have lost a parent in action or after a deployment or that sort of thing. Those kids come free of charge for a week. Unfortunately, it's been growing. But we, through our volunteer efforts and our giving to Camp Wapiti, we're able to give those kids at least a week when they're doing fun things and can think about something besides their issues.
Yeah. And I know you also do the first responder awards every fall.
Mm-hmm. That'll be coming up in August 9th, I believe. And we just, for our first responders, we like to show them the respect that they deserve. We provide, we cook out for them, we provide entertainment, we just provide hopefully a nice day outside in Park City. And we usually do that at the old Miners Hospital.
Yeah. Now, what about the building itself? I mean, back in the day, it used to be a private club. I remember those days. It was actually kind of fun. You could host private parties, a bar, because you had a liquor license. How is it used now?
Now, we just use it for members and member guests. We do still, for one more year, Sundance does rent it for a period of time during Sundance season. But it's really right now just for members and guests. We have our meetings on every other Thursday or so to discuss business, and we have a social then. We invite potential new members. But hopefully in the future we'll be open more like it used to be. But right now we're just trying to revitalize the interior, and it's still nice, but it's very historic, we'll say. But we're hoping to engage the community more by being open more, but right now we're just focusing on growing membership.
Yeah, it's a brick building. Is it safe? I mean, seismically?
I've not been there during an earthquake, but it's been here 100 years, and I don't see anything falling off of it. So we do have it we have a reserve fund, and we're able to keep the building up really nicely. When we talk about improving, we're really just talking about aesthetically.
Yeah, okay. Decor, mm-hmm. kind of lightening it up. It's right. pretty dark inside.
Right.
Yeah. And there's no elevator in the building, or the elevator just doesn't work?
There is a lift, which is much like an elevator from what I understand, but it's much, much slower. It does provide accessibility, but it's not used a lot by people that don't require accessibility, but it does work. I've used it in the last week.
Okay, and again, as you mentioned, you've got rentals to Sundance of the building. You also have the commercial space on the Main Street level. So that's kind of how you add to mm-hmm. the member dues in terms
right,
of-
right. We're fortunate that we own our building and that we're able to, we've been able to keep the lodge going for so many years because we own the building and we've had tenants downstairs. Currently, Tanner Trading's our great tenant down there, and that allows us to keep the building up nicely and has kept us around for years through ups and downs in membership.
Okay. All right. Again, it's Flag Day, a celebration happening noon at the Park City Senior Center on Woodside Avenue, starting at noon. Everyone's welcome. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Nope. It'll be a beautiful day. Remember to bring your umbrella so you don't melt in the sun.
Okay. Yeah, and it's just a great way to kick off the patriotic season leading into the 4th of July.
Okay, Michael, okay. Cheryl, thanks okay. so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
The annual Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch County's overall ball happening later this month. And in the studio with details, the executive director of Habitat for Humanity, Shelley Barris, along with the CEO of Park City Board of Realtors, Jamie Johnson. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning,
Good
Leslie.
Good morning.
Shelley, let's start with you, and maybe you can just tell us about Habitat for Humanity, what you do, and why people should support you through this yeah. fundraiser.
Thank you. So Habitat for Humanity is an affordable homeownership program in our community, and so we are helping house our workforce in Summit and Wasatch counties through affordable homeownership. And we've been around for 30 years, so celebrating our 30th anniversary this year.
Well, congratulations there. Jamie, how is the Board of Realtors involved in
yes.
all of this?
So about 4 years ago, we as a board made it a strategic initiative to support local community events and specifically geared towards affordable housing, and started with an event called Hats Off to Housing that we hosted out at the movie studios, and were able that year to raise some money to go towards the HOPA project for Mountainlands Community Housing Trust. And then in the second year of us deciding to continue this and make it an annual fundraiser, we did the same thing. We actually hosted up at Deer Valley and again supported Mountainlands. And so then last year we came on board with Habitat for Humanity and decided to give them 2 years of our support. And so once again this year we're getting behind their initiatives to raise money for their projects.
All right. And so all of the money raised then goes directly to Habitat.
Correct. And the really nice thing about this event, so the first 2 years we threw the event. So we, you know, had all of the expense of the event. And this year and last year both, we've been able just to really write checks directly to Habitat for what they're doing. And so all of our proceeds and funds from our philanthropic foundation to our Board of Realtors, our multiple listing service, all are supporting the event. So out of our annual budgets, we are giving funds for that. And then we are also supporting them with the silent auction and live auction items to be able to hopefully raise more money on the night of the event.
All right. So after this second year, though, I mean, will you go back to doing your overall ball and you'll go back to doing a separate fundraiser, or is it always going to
we're not sure yet. Our board votes on that each year as to if there's a new project in town or something that's going on that they want to get behind. So I think they'll evaluate probably by the end of this year and look at what's out there, what's going on, or it may be that we do our own event and support both of those two entities again.
Okay. Shelley, why don't you give us the details then of the gala?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are June. I don't know how I'm already in January again. Friday, June 27th. We're at the Grand Summit Hotel this year in the ballroom. And the event starts at 6 p.m. and we'll have a lovely dinner and silent auction, live auction, and you know, some amazing time spent together with community members. And tickets are $250. We still do have some available, and they seem to be that last minute rush, as we all do, starting to really sell. So it'd be great if you're interested to get online and buy a ticket and join us.
Okay, the online address then is what?
Is habitat-utah.org.
Okay, and what's easy about this is that you don't need to go out and buy any dress.
It is so true. I mean, you can if you want. If you would like to glam up, we are welcoming all, but it is a casual dress, and so flannels and jeans and overalls, you know, we always on our team bling up our overalls and wear that, but it can just be a casual, fun evening on the mountain.
Okay. Let's see, the evening includes both a live and silent auction. Can you tell us about some of the items you've got?
Oh, so many fun things on our silent auction. We just picked up some great jewelry from Park City Jewelers yesterday, which we always appreciate their support, but some trips, a fabulous trip to Mexico, a house in Mexico that is in an amazing community. So, you know, if you want to get together some friends and make plans to bid on that, I think you think ahead and be prepared. It's really an amazing thing. Jamie, you guys have supported some golf. We've got golf at almost every place in the community, and that's always a great thing.
Yeah, there's some fine art. There's some local staycations with some of our property management companies.
Oh, some St. George area Hurricane Lake golf down there, and a house that does house, I think, 20 people. So if you want a big, nice golf weekend, like take a look at that. And then just some other, of course, amazing community support. River Horse on Main is doing a $2,500 dinner package. So if you wanted to get your friends together and do that, also fun. And every other business in this community supports us and supports so many nonprofits, and we appreciate that community.
And there's some opportunity drawings. There's going to be gift cards to local owners here. There's so many things. We're doing some golf baskets, a men's basket, a women's basket with some great items in it. So if you're a big golfer, there's definitely lots for you there. Mm-hmm.
And the silent auction, will that open to everyone online or just those who are at the...
Yeah, so that is online, and it will open it up, you know, hopefully the Friday before the event so people can start looking. And, you know, we know everybody has a lot of plans in the summer, so they may not be able to join us at the event, but they can certainly get in, find some great deals, and support our next project.
Okay, and that's what you're raising money for, the next
yes.
project? What's the next project?
Yes, so we are just getting ready to break ground on our last 10-plex of townhomes in the Silver Creek Village. So very excited to get that going, and that's what this funding is going to go to support. So we're going to be excited to share some of that with people at the event and maybe be able to talk about a little bit about our next potential project as well. So
in Silver Creek Village?
Nope. So we are working with Columbus Pacific Development on the with a wonderful group of private, public, nonprofit partners for the Klein Dally project. So
we could see a few units over there if
yes.
that goes forward.
Yeah, would be great. So
what are you thinking about? How many?
You know, I think it just depends on, as you heard from the council this morning, you know, what their design looks like. But for us, you know, we'd be looking at, you know, a minimum of around 10 units that we'd be able to build single family detached homes in
okay.
the project.
All right. Well, you've been with the organization for how long now?
15 years.
Okay, so half the
yeah.
life. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about just that kind of what sort of impact Habitat has had
yeah.
on the community over those last
yeah.
three decades.
Thank you. I feel really, we had a stewardship, a thank you event earlier this spring up at Montage, and working through that, and I see that we've been around 30 years, and we have, in the last 4 years, built more houses than we had built the prior, you know, 25 or so years. And we were a small volunteer-run organization for a very long time, and so a lot of great people in this community helped that happen and got houses built and put families in homes. And we talk to those people often. We run into them. They work in the community, and what an impact that made for them, for their families, and their stability. And they're still here being able to work in this community because of that support, and it, you know, getting harder and harder
every day for that to happen.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it was kind of done one unit at a time, so it was very slow going. How many did you end up building in Silver Creek Village?
So our total will be 26 homes in that project.
After this 10 is done.
Yeah.
Which is significant.
Yeah.
And total units then over the last 30 years?
So we are, I'm so bad, I should know this. I think we're like at 35.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. And then in terms of the those units in Silver Creek Village, you've got 16 completed, people moved in?
Yes, yeah.
And then construction will start or has started?
It has not started yet, just finishing up our funding on that. But the plans are submitted to the county. We're working through that process and hope to be doing that August 1st.
Oh, great. Yeah. And then you mentioned a 10-plex, it's one building or?
Yeah, one building with 10 townhomes in it. And there's some 3 and 4 bedroom units in that. So as soon as we know there's a shovel in the ground, we'll start that application process for people.
I was going to say, at what point does that application process begin? How far along are you with the units?
I mean, we'd like to try to start it as we're starting foundation footings and foundations, just so we can get people prepared. We have sweat equity. They need to be able to work through that. And this project is targeted to 60% or below AMI. So,
okay. Yeah. If people are interested, then what do they do? Just go online and just kind of follow the process?
Yeah, if they go to our website, habitat-utah.org, there is a process for you to sign up to get on a contact list, and then there's an amazing page that tells you kind of all about the process, some little videos, some information about it. And also, I would just say we work with the Housing Resource Center and Park City Municipal, and we are doing very often some housing how-tos throughout the community. Those are done in English and then a separate session in Spanish as well. And that information is also on our website. It's a great way to just learn about affordable housing, the process in general in our community, but we will be talking about this project as well.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so. Yeah. Just get your tickets and come out or support on the auction.
Right. And we just really want to thank the Board of Realtors for doing this partnership with us. It's been so much fun, and we really appreciate the community of Realtors coming out and the funding that they're bringing to the project. So.
Okay. Again, it's Friday, June 27th at the Grand Summit at Canyons Village, habitat-utah.org for tickets and more information. Shelley, Jamie, thanks for your time.
Thank you.